From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made with a 15-year-old who we will call JJ. JJ presents herself as a young woman, but her mother doesn't approve of her lifestyle choice, and she doesn't want Jay in her family home. Jay has anger issues, and after working with the court system, she was placed in a non-secure detention. While she was there, the staff said she was confrontational with workers and other youth. Experts say her anger came from her struggle with her identity and how people around her perceived her. Now, Jay's story is reflective of the struggles many trans youth face. Up to 40% of homeless youth identify as LGBTQ, with 68% of those youth saying they are homeless because their families rejected them. The Center for Youth is a local leader in providing supports for youth at risk, and now it's gearing up for an annual event that makes those support services possible. So we're talking about Fashion Week of Rochester, which returns coming up here. It features 5 nights of runway shows highlighting national and local designers while raising awareness about the challenges faced by people like Jay and other at-risk youth. This hour, we'll get a preview of this year's events, and we'll talk about how the organizers and participants hope their efforts will help vulnerable populations in our community. I'd like to welcome our guests, and Elaine Spall, Executive Director of the Center for Youth. And stories like Jay's are sadly common in our community.
They are. And, you know, one of the things people keep asking we're going to talk about today, Evan, and thank you so much for having us, is why Fashion Week matters. And the amazing irony of bringing together something like these glorious fashion shows, runway shows. Saturday night is already sold out. People are upset with me, but that's the way it goes. And raising dollars and awareness so that we can open more shelters and add more services for our young people. So Fashion Week of Rochester, while it's glitz and glamour and beauty and creativity, and of course all local models and local retailers, is also making it possible for our young people to be safe. What an interesting combination.
Yeah, there is the stereotype that it's this sort of stratospheric part of the world that is untouchable for most of us.
Right.
Okay, well, we got a lot to talk about here, and let's say hello to our other guests here. Christopher Washington is an emerging designer and a lead the way role model. Chris, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us is Joan Lincoln, one of the originators of Fashion Week of Rochester and owner of Panache. What's Panache?
Oh, Panache is luxury resale at its best in Rochester.
There's a reason I'm asking you. I'm not luxury and I don't have much
Panache. It's all about style and flair and just being, you know, totally extraordinary in how you dress.
Well, it's nice to have you.
Thank you for being here. Thank you.
And someone with Panache is Aman Abed, who's a board member for the Center for Youth, Lead the Way role model, and executive director of the New York CLU, the local chapter. What's the full title of that, by the way? The Rochester chapter of the NYCLU?
The chapter director of the Genesee Valley region.
Genesee Valley
ACLU
region. You guys change it like every other year. Nice to see you. Thanks for being here.
Thank you, Evan.
I'm going to actually start in a place that is not totally related to Center for Youth, but I just want to get this out of the way because there's just last week on the show we talked about the way we shame we can shame or judge people, particularly people who are homeless. So there was this viral video of a man shaving on the subway from Manhattan to New Jersey, and it gets 3 million views, and people are calling him an animal and all this stuff. And it turns out he had been homeless and just wanted to look presentable for family. Yeah. And now there's a story out of Syracuse at a Dunkin' Donuts where workers there was a man who was homeless, was taking a rest and charging a phone inside of a Dunkin' Donuts. And the workers there dumped a pitcher of water on him and started laughing at him. And they captured it on video. And now Dunkin' has said that they have dismissed those employees and they're going to add sensitivity training for their staff. But, Elaine, I know that's an adult. That's not someone to be served by the Center for Youth. But I do want to start with this question of when we see videos like this, when we see us judging or laughing at people in hard circumstances, what you think it sort of says about the state of our world?
You know, I think that folks don't realize the propensity of homelessness and how many homeless people are actually employed. There are numbers of people, certainly adults and also some young people who go to school and are homeless, who go to work and are homeless. So the employed part-time or full-time folks who actually have no stable housing, living in cars, living in unusual places, couch surfing, going from bed to bed, place to place, is not so strange. Those of us who do that work really are always shocked at how little the world knows and understands. So many people, I think, would like to think that it's a very unusual person who maybe is drug addicted or has a mental health issue or whatever combination and, you know, can't get their act together and has been put out for good reason. And honestly, what we see is that low-wage jobs and other lack of affordable housing often ends up with families. We know there are families. We know there are 2,300 families last year in our school district who presented as homeless at some point along the continuum. Our goal, obviously, at the center is to work with those kids, 12 to 21 or 22, to make sure that what they're struggling with as young people is not a chronic homelessness as adults. So whether it's rapid rehousing, transitional living, emergency shelter, we're going to be out in front. The world, the shaming and the making people feel badly about themselves, you know, I always tease to say, you know, a teeny bit of guilt is not bad, whether it's, you know, your kids or your husband or somebody, but shame is not an emotion, an effect that you should have. To make somebody feel like they are not worthy is perhaps the greatest disservice we can do to another human being. And, you know, but for the grace of God, I always say many of us are privileged. Many of us have had lots and lots of opportunities. Not everybody has. But we have got to be honest about the state of homelessness. It is pervasive. It is difficult. And it is not being solved in the way it should be. And we're trying very, very hard. And Fashion Week of Rochester will keep three shelters open and help us open a fourth one. We have many shelters. Many of them are fully funded by government agencies. We have some that are not funded by anybody except those of you listening and those of you coming to see us next week during Fashion Week. So God bless Rochester. I'm not saying that we're free of shaming, but I do think that when we talk about homelessness and what it means to have a justice model, people do step up.
Yeah, I think in this case, by the way, I wouldn't have fired these guys. I think that that video going viral, they're probably receiving a lot of shaming themselves for the way they treated this gentleman. And I think I would have probably suspended them, taken them aside, and said, "We're going to do some things about this." But you're going to be dealing with your own shame for a lot.
Yeah, you know, we often with young people, we're often in for teen court example. You know, they have community service. Maybe they need to go work in a shelter. Maybe they need to go serve people who are less fortunate. Maybe
that's
they need
do.
To
that's
really
do, yeah.
have a struggle that yeah. is not just so easy. You know, I'm terminated. I go get another job,
and then
be angry
nothing.
About it. Yeah, and learn
angry,
nothing. And now you're
nothing.
Angry, and you learn nothing.
Absolutely.
And I
yeah.
think that, you know, I always, when I was dean of students at RIT, I used to say, I need to make a student who's misbehaving a little uncomfortable and inconvenient. And that may not be kicking them off campus, but telling them they can't participate in anything but class. So, you know, there's a lot of organizations, I think, often go the extreme. We've seen it from Starbucks and others, you know, where employees have misbehaved and they're trying to make up for it. But I'm with you. I mean, let's really talk about how it feels to be that person. So,
all right,
yeah.
So let's talk
So
let's talk about Fashion Week here, and we are going to be talking about these various issues of who benefits and how. But I do want to kind of peel back a little bit and say, how many years have you been doing Fashion Week?
This is our ninth year, Joni.
Since 2010, right?
Yeah. This is our ninth year.
Yeah.
How did it start? Was it your idea?
No, it wasn't mine, but it was a group of us who got together and they were like, you know what? We've got so many great designers in Rochester. Let's do something for them. Let's get them on the runway. You know, we've always done fashion shows, whether it be at country clubs or malls or et cetera, et cetera. But this small group got together and started to talk, and it was about the same time that I was writing the business plan for my first business. And it all came together so quickly, and maybe too quickly, and we did the best we could, and it was we gave birth to this great idea, and then it like quickly snowballed from there and just grew to this what we have today, and it's been fantastic. I mean, I think it was only a couple of days at first.
2 days.
We
raised $30,000.
Right.
And we were looking for petty cash to buy yeah. water for the models.
Oh, I remember.
And I was not really involved. I was watching
right.
from behind because someone had said to me, I think we're going to do this best if we have the proceeds go to a not-for-profit.
Right.
So let's pick a not-for-profit. Someone said, call Elaine Spall. She's
yeah.
up for a good time.
Yeah.
I guess they said that. And I said, I'm up for a good time. And I was really just a spectator.
Your CFO, your chief fashion organizer, Meg Mundy, probably said that.
Yes. Yeah. Just we'll figure this out. And yeah. I saw, Evan, then a kernel of interest. Even those two nights, they weren't tremendously organized, and we
yeah,
didn't
no.
have the same kind of social media, and we didn't raise a lot of money, but those places were packed, and people loved the idea. The connection to the work at the center has taken a little bit longer to make its way. This year, I've told people we're taking the gloves off. The themes, what we talk about, it's not how you stand, it's the stand you take. Out there constantly making sure people understand you can look good and do good. At first, we were just all about the glamour, right?
Well,
and,
yeah.
And then slowly. This community loves its fashion.
It sure
and
does.
Loves the energy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's really just, you know, one of the things I was sort of grousing last night, I was telling my husband who was watching football and wasn't really listening, but that was better because I was like ranting about the fact that all the tickets were sold for Saturday night and people were upset with us. And he's like, how can you be upset about a sellout? And I said, I know, you're right. We should be grateful for that. So Rochester has a thirst for this. You know, Joan and others, I mean, I can't even tell you. It's a lot of work for her, a lot of work.
And for our models. I mean, all of our models, how many nights are we on the runway?
We're on five nights.
Five nights. And all these models.
For free. Don't
volunteer
pay anybody.
Their time. You know, they're doing hair so that the hair salons can be represented and makeup so the makeup artists can be represented. And then, of course, they're coming in for fittings to all of the boutiques.
Amanda and Chris are doing that? Are you guys doing that?
They're both in the Lead the Way show. In fact, all three of these guys are in the Lead the Way show. So we're going to talk about that in a second. But Chris, your clothes are on the runway.
Correct.
Okay. So we've got a new emerging designer among us. Should we talk to him about that?
Yeah, we got all hour. Don't you worry. We're going to get to all of this stuff here. By the way, Chris, you grew up in Rochester? Where are you from
originally?
Yes,
I did. I grew up in Rochester, graduated from Bishop Kearney.
Bishop Kearney.
Homegrown.
Mm-hmm.
And
what did you want to do when you graduated? What did you think about your future?
Basketball was the only thought. That was the only thought I had.
How tall are you?
6'4".
6'4"?
That explains it.
How old were you when you could dunk a basketball for the first time?
I was 13.
13?
I was 13.
You could still put it down, I'm sure.
For sure.
Yeah, okay. But when did you start thinking that may not be the future?
When I stopped college. It was a crazy process to go from a basketball player to having to think about a job, you know, something I never, just, it was never that in my mind. So from there, I was working at Tops, and I worked in the mall, and I worked in a couple other jobs, and it was just like, yo, this is not it.
Do you look back, because I imagine growing up, you know, there's nothing wrong with having a dream. Second of all, you could really play, and I get it. You're thinking that I'm going to work at this. This is going to be my life, my future. Do you wish someone had really kind of grabbed you and made you think, all right, basketball's one track. What's another track that's possible? Because it sounded like you were kind of a one-track mind to basketball.
Definitely.
Yeah.
You know, that's what drives me every morning that I wake up. I think about the number of adults that I cross paths with who didn't think to offer me anything more than just, you know, if you go over that screen better and shoot the three next time, we'll win this, or, you know, this will be the next goal. So I look at that and it's like, man, that's hurtful. You know, so now for me to be in a position with so many eyes on me, and like even before Fashion Week, just being like a motivational speaker, this is just like something that I have to get out there. It's like there's many options in this world to go for. And yeah, like that one track mind is not good for anybody. So me being there for the athletes as well, because I'm still very, very closely connected, is like letting them know, like don't let them feed you, you know, just basketball.
Do they listen though?
Definitely.
They do?
I say, oddly, all the athletes and all of the youth that I interact with, they all listen to me. I don't have, like, you know, crazy feedback and stuff like that. Like, they go for what I say.
Because you probably had a lot of cred with them.
Definitely.
And they understand, you know, your story. How old are you now?
28.
28 years old. And so I imagine they can really relate to what you're thinking. I also think, though, you know, I can't relate to kids who grow up with difficult circumstances. I didn't have difficult circumstances. I did not grow up in poverty. I'm thinking about kids who grew up playing basketball, playing a sport, kind of hitching their dreams to that, and no one has kind of given them another path. Is it hard for kids in those circumstances to think beyond maybe one thing like basketball?
Yeah, it's mind-blowing when you don't have the exposure. You know, to see, to be who I am today is just like, you wouldn't believe it coming from where I came from, you know, and I didn't even have the crazy circumstances. I had a mom and dad, mm-hmm. grandmas and loving family. But just to know that, you know, now that I'm older and like people are, I know my worth, you know, I travel the world and people pay me for what I naturally do. It's like, okay, you know, this is what it is. But to think that I was only attached to basketball where somebody could tell me, go do this, go do that. You're not doing that right. It's just like, wow, there's a whole bigger world out here, and I've thrown myself into it. And now I realize that since I've reached this platform, and I'm very thankful for Fashion Week for just like really shining the light on it, it's like I have to put out for everybody who's watching, and then the ones who are coming up like me who are not only growing up in circumstances that may not be the best, but the ones who are, because I feel like I've seen both sides of it, because I'm very, very connected in the corporate world as well when it comes down to doing videos and motivational speaking. So I see both ends of the spectrum. And for me, it's like I have to be the one to bridge the gap and help people on the other side understand, like, you know, you are blessed to have these things, you know, like other people don't have it as good as you do. And to be able to pour that compassion in there as well. You know, like you said, like you couldn't imagine what it's like to go through those circumstances. And for me to be in it, I didn't go through a lot. You know, I've had friends killed and seen a lot of crazy things, but I wasn't actually in it. So that still makes me, you know, my own little piece. But to know that when I got to Kearney, there were kids who just were living with way different circumstances, you know, and to see the things that they would complain about, it was just like, wow, you know, this is a completely different world. So for me, it's like I realized that I just have to be that person to put out and sort of open up the doors to touch every single mind that I encounter, no matter what race, where you come from.
And I imagine you look back and you don't think, boy, I wish I hadn't played basketball, in the same way that you're talking to kids now. And the message is not give up sports, I imagine, mm-hmm. right?
No, it's not at all. It's like grow your mind and really find your worth. You know, it's crazy because I think that's one of the craziest parts of just like that whole sports thing is that they only, and this is just like the honest truth, they only utilize, you know, you for what you can do for them, and then it's done. You know, and I think that was another hurtful part of the process that was like, it's actually comical now, you know, when I see all of these coaches and the people who, you know, I was...
You felt used.
Yeah, for sure. But it's cool, though, because I needed to go through it. I needed to be the one that they did it to that was going to stand up and say, okay, that wasn't cool. I see exactly what you did. Let's be honest about it. And now we can move forward. Because there's going to be other athletes and many that I know who played with me that broke them. When they saw that, oh, no, they don't care about you like that. Like, they're just like, oh, well.
And we could probably spend a full hour talking about how this extends to the college ranks.
Definitely.
And the money that gets made and the money that doesn't trickle down.
Yeah, and it just, that's why knowing your worth is key.
Yeah.
You know?
So how did you end up in fashion?
It became a scramble. You know, being a basketball player, and just to say, like, going into college and being in just environments as a basketball player, being a 6'4 young man, it's just like I didn't have to do much, you know, but for things to play out the way they did, it was like, okay, this is not a joke anymore. You know, like there's nobody else is going to sit here and take care of your schoolwork for you. Nobody's going to do the paperwork. Nobody's going to do this stuff for you. So it was like, okay, we have to start scrambling and really piecing some things together. So from there, I started Top Flight as just making music. And Top Flight was the whole analogy of just like setting myself apart. Like when you are in a plane, like you see a completely different view. And at the time, after basketball went, which was like my entire world, it was like, I have nothing other than this dream. And I was so serious about it. It was like, listen, if I'm not going to do it on the court, it's going to be from this other avenue that I'm going to choose and create in comparison to, like I said, working at the jobs like Tops and the mall and, you know, the schools. I worked at schools, which was a great thing too. You know, I got in there with the kids and on many different levels, you know, kids with like mental disabilities. And I worked in just like a variety of schools, which I'm thankful for that part of it. But being in the stores, having to smell people's feet and, you know, sell dreams and things that I just really didn't believe in. Yeah, it pushed me right to fashion because people always have paid attention to the athletes. And it just made me realize they're going to continue paying attention to you, but you have to adjust your role and actually make it worth something, you know? You can be an athlete who is just, you know, a person that is just like leading, because you do this and everyone's watching. But it's something different to step into the role and actually like be a role model and like show people the potential that they have within themselves. You know, I feel like it's selfish for me to get to this point where now I can just take pics on, you know, what I want to do out here in the world. And then when I ride through the neighborhood that I grew up in, literally, I was over there 2 days ago, and when I see kids, and it's like, you don't even know what Hawaii looks like, you know? Like, you don't even know what it's like to make things like that happen. So for me, it's like, I have to go back and give everything. Like, that's just every single thing that I can.
Did you always have good threads growing up?
I did, but you know, like as far as clothes?
Yeah.
I
mean, did you care about it?
I did, but you know, it was always what I made it. I think that's one thing that I realized, that whatever I put my mind to and make cool, that's what everybody is going to see it as.
And so now let's talk a little bit about your role in the show here. What do you got coming up?
Everyone, all the great people behind Fashion Week have put me like in this very great position to, you know, show off my brand, show off my clothes, who I am as a person. And I realized, even in this moment, this is still not about me. You know, like, I had this entire plan, and it's crazy because nobody knew. I told Megan and Amber not too long ago, but I saw this a year ago. I was in Hawaii before Fashion Week ever. Before I knew anything about it, I thought, like, okay, you know what? I see this thing, and I need to get myself in here. And I went and put it on my vision board, and I had this big plan to, I'm going to like come in here and sell so much clothes, and everybody's gonna feel this wave. You know, they've been sleeping on me. And I was very serious about it, very serious. I'm telling you, it's on my vision board right now. And then it was just like, you know what? Who are you to think that you step on this platform and like your mindset is on money? You know, when there are kids who don't have, you know what I mean, the possibility to even be on billboards or on the front of City Grill. It's just like I had to take a step back and just like, all right, let's get this thing out here.
No, I hear that, but it's a little bit about you and the brand. This is a great opportunity.
I tell you, honestly, it is. It is, but for me, like, it's more about the kids and for them as well. Like, it's for the youth. Like, it's not about me. Like, I realized that this is just the spot that God put me in.
Elaine Spall, who is this person?
So luckily you guys can't see me. That's one of the things I love about radio. I'm about to cry.
Yeah.
I heard about this guy, Chris, from Megan, who I think maybe Amber saw this post or something, and she's got, I got a new talent for us, and he emerged, and the next thing you know, he's on the cover of the magazine, cover in the lookbook, cover of City Grill. But it was his heart and soul that sold this, and this is Fashion Week, Evan. People don't get it every year, and you invite us back because of that. We're not here talking about the glitz and glamour only, and it is so much fun. It's going to be better than ever, but I'm going to tell you something. This is Fashion Week. This is why we're here. We're connecting. The role model show, the Wednesday show, which is called Lead the Way, is in, and all three of my colleagues here today are on the runway. I'm going to probably walk a little bit myself that day. The mayor is going to start the show. Garth Fagan, Mark Iacona, Carlos Carbolata, Chris, Iman, Joni. I mean, these are people, eventually Evan Dawson putting it out there. These are
subtle.
People who are going to be there to walk the runway to say very simply why they care about this community. And we're going to have about 400 young people, teens and others, who are there for free, who are getting to see this show. Now, there's also about 40 teen models, so they're getting a chance. We're not going to make any money on this show, but that's okay.
You're talking about next Wednesday night, is that right?
Wednesday
the
night.
10th.
Lead the Way.
So a week
right?
from tomorrow.
Yeah. I mean, we start with a show next Tuesday, which is a lunch show, which is going to be so much fun because we start out with a whole mess of our firefighters. And, of course, that's always
Can we
a
go
treat.
Through the whole schedule?
Yeah.
All right, so let's do this. Because
wanna do that?
Chris, your story is...
He's the best guy. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is...
Just listening to you, it's hard to imagine you're not going to have great success in your life. And I'm really blown away by what you have done to make adjustments in your life to get on a track like this, and it's amazing. So thank you for sharing that story. It's really great.
I appreciate it.
It's really great. And I know you look kind of emotional yourself. Let me just ask you, where are people going to be able to find your stuff? And where are people going to be able to know about your brand?
I will have a table on Wednesday and I believe Thursday night.
Oh, he's so sweet. Look at this. I mean, this is a real deal, right? Chris, I'm going to try to help a little bit. What nights are you on? What nights are your clothes on the runway? Wednesday and Thursday?
Yes, Wednesday and Thursday.
All right, okay. So you're about to hear the schedule, because what we're going to do here, in a moment we'll break. I want to ask, before we get to break, I want to ask Iman, who's a board member, is this why you signed up for the board? You have no time in your life. I know the stuff that you're doing. You end up getting on a board like this. Is it stories like this? Is this why you're doing this?
Yeah, I think we're all emotional over here. I think one of the things that I saw for the center that was just so unique was that all the money that goes into this center is not for a single person besides to keep the staff running and to be able to bring the money back to all these youth in the community. And I think we're also addressing the immediate needs of these children. I think constantly as a city, we're thinking more long-term. What do we do, you know, as an institution or as a city? How do we change policy and how do we make sure that, you know, things like homelessness don't continue to stay at a rise, or poverty amongst children continue to stay at a rise, as unfortunately it continues to do so. But how do we make sure that these children can be safe at the end of the day? How can we make sure that we invest in each of these children? And this center does an amazing job at bringing in the youth and making sure they are a part of every single stage of the decision-making process. I mean, sitting on the board, I mean, all the programs that are running and what's been going on are all run by the youth. It's not run by the adults, not even run by Elaine. Elaine sits at the head of it, but she's constantly referring to the youth to understand first and foremost what is it that you need and what is it that you have to do. And so I think I really wanted to get involved with the center to be able to say that I've been able to help push this along with everyone else that's been involved for so long, and to really invest in people, you know, like Chris. Chris is amazing. I'm so glad that we met today. But, you know, there are so many different people that the center just highlights and is able to really just invest in. And I can't, you know, thank Elaine enough for her vision and for helping her kind of allow this to flourish to what it is today.
Did you know you're going to have to get on a runway, though?
She suggested it to me last year, and so I said, and
she's
she had
relentless.
Joked around it, and then all of a sudden, it didn't hit me until this past weekend when I visited the tent, and I looked at the kids, at the teenagers, and I was like, oh my God, I can't walk. What am I doing? So we'll see what goes on next week.
Well, do you guys, around this time of year when she starts texting you, you just got to just text back and say, new phone, Elaine. Yeah. Or just, not Elaine, you have to, just new phone.
New
I don't
phone,
know who this
does.
Is. I'm sorry, new phone, who this?
Who's this?
New
nice try.
Let's get our only break of the hour. When we come back, we'll go down the whole runway, the rundown of the runway, I guess. Fashion Week Rochester is coming up in just a few days, and they've got 5 nights of the runway, but they've got different events scheduled. You hear people like Chris and the ways that this this organization is trying to help kids in our community, designers like Christopher Washington. So let's go ahead and take that only break of the hour. We're going to come back right here on Connections. Coming up in our second hour, there is a new executive director for Unshackle Upstate. His name is Michael Crocker, and he joins me in studio. He was an aide to Congressman Chris Collins, and now Crocker hopes to lead this organization that bills itself as pro-growth, pro-taxpayer, pro-business, in a direction that will help grow businesses in upstate New York. So how do they plan to do that? We'll talk about it next hour. Welcome back to Connections. The extraordinary story of Christopher Washington is just one of many that Fashion Week always brings to us. In fact, Elaine and I have talked. We've said, we can't just come out here and talk fashion for 50 minutes. I want to know who is impacted. And every year we meet people like Christopher and you really just get that firsthand listening experience to hear who's benefiting in our community. So Fashion Week of Rochester is online. Where? What's the website?
Yes, fashionweekofrochester.org. Visit us. Eventbrite is where you buy the tickets. Please don't wait. You know, I don't want to be having lots and lots of enemies who said, what do you mean I can't buy them at the door? Not happening. Not this year. And we're grateful for that. You know, the energy, I'm looking over at Joan Lincoln, the energy from all of our participants, our retailers, they take a hit, but they also hopefully make some money and get some good energy. But it's a lot. It's a big commitment. You're letting people borrow your clothes. Joni has certainly let me borrow clothes. And they're walking on the runway with them. One of our years in the past, you know, we've been at places like under tunnels and on roofs and crazy places. Sometimes the clothes get dirty. And so having it be in a tent with a nice floor has been much better on the retail operator.
All right, so it's fashionweekofrochester.org?
Fashionweekofrochester.org.
Where is it this year? Because it's
going
bounced
back.
Around.
Yes, we bounced around, and Meg begged me, and I said, okay, we're going back to the big tent on the very edge of our city near Midtown Athletic. Okay, it's right on Highland Drive. Why is that important? It was easier for us this year. We're opening new shelters. We're opening school programs. We're expanding Teen Court with Raise the Age. We had to have it easy. Year 10 will go somewhere else. So easy to find. If you go down 590 and you don't see the tent, something's wrong with you. You're not paying attention. And there's a big poster that says Hank Parker has Fashion Week covered, and there you go. Easy parking, easy access. Just
park
just
there at the Midtown
park
area?
Park right there.
Right off Midtown?
Right on the Midtown site. There's a big lot right behind, and we'll take care of you.
Okay. And so the first event of Fashion Week is?
Tuesday. It's a lunch show next Tuesday. It's a week from today. It's a lunch show. And that lunch show is going to feature women lawyers, firefighters, these amazing young violinists, just lots of business people, lots of fun stuff. The next night is the Lead the Way night when we have Chris.
So it's Wednesday the 10th,
Wednesday the 10th, a week from tomorrow. Wednesday the 10th.
6 Chris, p.m. to 8 p.m.
Chris, Iman, Joan, all walking the runway, telling their stories briefly about why Fashion Week matters, why they love the community. We roll right into Thursday, Walk and Roll, which is a crazy night, very, very high-end, edgy, cool. Chris's things will be on the runway, and he's often the emergent designers. Joni, are you on that night?
We are, too.
Panache is featured that night. Friday is a family night, so if you want to make sure that you expose your families and you don't want to see something that might be a little adult in nature, come Friday night.
What?
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 What? There's, you know, lingerie and bathing suits and cool stuff. What night is that, Evan's asking?
No, I did not say that. Do not incriminate me.
And then, of course, the grand finale is Saturday night.
The 13th, October 13th.
Yeah, and again, we're sold out. But call me, and so, I might be able to sneak somebody
so the
in.
So the Saturday show is already sold out.
It's sold out. Mm-hmm.
Let us not forget about the boutique crawl.
Yes, go ahead, Joni.
It really launches this Thursday night.
Right.
Nights from tonight.
Mm-hmm, right.
Where all of the boutiques who participate and some of the designers, we extend our hours, our shopping hours, and we invite people to take on Fashion Avenue and hit us at our boutiques and see some of the looks that we're going to be presenting on the runways. And that kicks off down at the tent at Midtown Athletic. Right. And the tent doesn't look like your normal tent. It is a glass dome, honeycomb-style tent. So it is an amazing sight. Yeah. But the boutique crawl really kicks it off. We have a lot of fun things planned.
How many boutiques? Like who's on the list there?
Oh, probably 25.
Yeah, easily.
All over the city.
Yeah, all over the city. Yeah. So you can either limo, bus, Uber, drive.
Right. Self-drive. Yeah.
Walk. Yep, we're ready for you.
Okay, and as a retailer yourself, Panache.
Yes.
Where are you, by the way?
I am at Brighton Commons, which is conveniently located next to ESL and Core Life, right there at the 12 Corners. We call it the Happy Corner. So I have my Panache Vintage and Finer Consignment Store, which is women's luxury resale, and then right next door is Panache Home, where I have furniture and home decor. So both stores will be open in Boutique Crawl, and we entertain your visit.
No embellishment. I'm curious to know what a boutique crawl, what Fashion Week does for retailers like yours.
Ooh, well, you know, I opened up my first business 2 months before the very first Fashion Week launched, and I really give credit to Fashion Week for my first year of success. You know, as a small business owner, I always promote shop small, shop local. But I tell you what, that first year as a small business owner is so scary. Even as a first year, you know, designer, I would imagine, you know, your first year, you're launching a new concept. But with the assistance of Fashion Week, and, you know, I was quickly branded, if you will. I was able to get myself branded with Fashion Week of Rochester.
And now, what's the difference between
now
and those opening days and now?
8 years later, I was able to open up a second and a third store, which I have dissolved the third into my second. And I feel like I get what I give. We do a lot of philanthropy in a different way throughout the community. And I'm just really proud of being able to you know, sustain ourselves and my panache team. And Fashion Week is a huge part of that.
How much are you going to raise this year for the Center for Youth?
We're gonna bring in about $725. Now, remember, there's $725.
Big numbers.
$725,000.
$725,000.
There are some expenses you got to cut.
There are lots and lots and lots of expenses, but at the end of the day, we'll get close to $500,000 in pure profit. Now, we've got lots of expenses because we have generators and runways and lights and toilets and tents and big tents and all kinds of expenses.
I'm not accusing you of pocketing the money, though.
I don't get paid anything extra.
If anything like that ever happened,
yes.
I would go so hard at you. I would be so disappointed.
That would be fine. I don't make an extra penny, I'll tell you right now, and I'm okay with that. People think I'm crazy, but you know, I have to tell you, Evan, this is our city. And I can't imagine anything more reflective of who we are, what we care about, and how we connect. The first year, everyone said to me, where do I get the bus? They thought I was busing them to New York City. And I said, what are you talking about? Where are the models coming from? We have local, gorgeous models, men and women, amazing small businesses. Look at Chris sitting next to me, amazing retail, amazing role models like Iman. We live in the best community. And anyone who isn't celebrating it doesn't even have to come to Fashion Week. Just send us your good vibes. But honestly, it is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity to say that we are together, looking good, doing good, standing together, not being afraid to stand on that runway. And one of the themes is it's not how you walk, it's how you lead. That makes a difference. It's not how you work it, it's how you work it out. And I think we're trying constantly to bring the two themes together so that people know that every dime. Why do we have so many sponsors? Because they're getting this huge energy, and they're getting, you know, obviously it's a tax-exempt organization, and they're giving a lot of good press, and people are stepping up. About $550,000 to $600,000 will be sponsors, people that want to stand with us. I have an individual woman who writes me a check for $20,000 every year just because she believes in what we do. She didn't even come last year. Doesn't matter. And these are the people who are making our city an amazing place.
All right, so what's in fashion? Let's talk about this. Iman. Iman's looking at me. You pointed immediately.
Iman, what are you going to wear, Iman? Iman's going to walk through on.
How do you figure
come
that
over
out?
Come over to Panache. I'll dress you.
Maybe I'll actually do that. Yeah. I'm like debating between a dress or pants. And
is
I'm
it
not
up to
sure
you?
Yet.
Yes, she gets to wear. They get to wear their own stuff on the Wednesday show.
Because we're representing who we are.
It's supposed to be who you are. Represent who you are.
Chris is in that show too. Is that right?
Chris is in that show, but Chris is going to be wearing Top Flight.
You're wearing.
He's
going
to be wearing his own.
When you're your own stuff that night.
A hat similar, probably to this, and then whatever else I choose.
Can't wait to see.
So what is like current or interesting or edgy in fashion?
I mean, it just goes back to who I am personally. You know, my brand just like is very attached to me, but then I want it to be attached to everyone else as well when it comes down to being a pilot sort of and controlling your own life. It's like, what do you like, you know? That's what it is. Like,
we can't see his shoes. His shoes. Okay.
Oh,
you know what? You got a tie on today. You look good. But there, you guys can't see Chris's shoes. He's got awesome shoes. I don't know what kind they are.
These are actually some of like Pharrell's Adidas.
Oh, there it is.
Let me see them over here.
There it is.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
You could rock a pair of those.
I don't know if I. I don't think I could pull those off, Chris.
Joni, tell us a little bit because you're the fashion expert. Tell us what.
I was going to say, not every trend is wearable by every person.
Right.
So let us remember that.
Well, that is definitely true.
Right? Thank you.
You wouldn't put me in a pillbox hat.
Just because, you know, somebody's wearing, you know, bell bottoms doesn't mean that you can,
right.
or skinny jeans. Let's take that a little bit, you know, closer to home. And I think, you know, for me, because I sell resale and higher end luxury couture labels, you know, I appreciate and respect those designers who have worked so hard to get to that status. But I get really excited when you see things like what Chris is creating. You know, it's just. It stimulates the mind and it makes you think, okay, so how can I rework something in my closet to kind of mimic what the message he's trying to share and design? I don't follow a trend. I have a lot of women who come into me and say, I don't have a personal style. Can you help me find that? Well, that takes a little while because we have to have a conversation about who you are. Is it for work? Is it for play? Is it for recreation? You know, it's a whole process, Evan. It's a whole process.
Cold shoulders, in or out?
Oh. Bye-bye.
Oh, wow. That was already. That
do you
was
like
fast.
That? Do you like that look?
I was like one of the few people who thought that was fun. Yeah.
Well, you know
yeah.
why? Because it's the part of the women's body that shows the sign of aging the least.
That's why it became popular?
Yes.
I said, oh, these are not things I'm thinking about. I'm not a fashion designer. And I usually catch on to trends when they're on their way out. I just
that's
found
why you
something.
Just caught it.
I just found Hypercolor shirts. They're great. Oh. You touch them and they change color.
Right.
That was back in my childhood. But no, I'm usually behind. But I don't know how you stay ahead of things. I'm always feeling like right when I think something is kind of cool.
But stuff comes back. I mean, Meg
always.
Says animal print is always in style.
What's old is new. Right. You know, vintage is newly chic. Yeah. I sell vintage clothes all day long because those styles are never going to go away. The designers learn from our
There's
vintage styles.
There's got to be some stuff that will never come back. There has to be some.
Oh, I don't know. You find one. We'll have that.
90s.
No, you said hammer pants. Last time it was hammer pants.
Hammer pants. Look at David Spade, what he used to wear on Weekend Update in the 90s. Suit coats that were maybe four sizes too big. Everything is like.
I actually have a friend that does that. Mm-hmm. And he's real cool.
Yeah.
See?
And he's making them double breasted with these enormous shoulder pads.
That's really it.
Mm-hmm. Purposely wearing stuff that's too big?
Yeah, he's very cool.
I thought everything was like slim and cut.
No, that's what for me, and I just believe it's a personal thing. Like, it's who you are. You know what I mean? I'm going to wear this hat because I like it, and people are going to accept it because I like it. And if they don't, then. You know, I mean, that's sort of on them, you know? So I just feel like you control your own fashion to an extent, and it's going to be as cool as you make it.
I think people gravitate.
I cannot make my 90s fashion cool. I've gone back and looked. Wearing like three shirts at a time, all of them large size for
with
no
the collars
reason.
Flipped.
There's nothing.
Right.
There's nothing that's going to make that cool. I appreciate the Christopher's confidence that you can make it cool. But sometimes you just gotta
I feel
own
like
it.
Christopher needs to do a makeover on Evan.
Yeah, if you come out with me. Come out with me and I'll just throw some stuff on.
Could we squeeze him into the Lead the Way show?
I think
would you be up for that next Wednesday?
I don't know.
We should open the show with him.
He's gonna. We have to tease him now. We do this.
You tease me every year about this. You're smart enough not to actually invite me because you've seen what I wear. And it's a good choice.
It's your own personal style, Evan. It's your own personal style.
Part of the thing is you're on radio, so you can kind of do what you want.
Exactly right, by the way. Why do you think I moved from television? Right when my hair was doing the moonwalk up my scalp, and it was a great chance for me to get in the radio. All right, let me read an email. We're gonna push it back to something a little more serious.
Okay.
So
yeah,
and it's an email from Mark wants to know, Evan, you got a member of City Council there, and you're talking fashion. Has your member of City Council seen the fashion choices for the East End fashion codes and dress codes?
Yes,
that's been a big story.
It is
in the
a
news.
Big story.
So,
you know, and I know that.
Can I refresh it before for our listeners?
Sure, you go ahead.
So
go ahead.
There are a lot of news stories recently, and a lot of conversation about dress codes in some East End clubs, and not just one, by the way. So I'm not going to single out any particular one, but there was maybe half a dozen or more that have dress codes that there are certain elements of the dress codes that seem pretty clearly racially targeted. Yeah. I'm trying to be objective, but it's hard to read them another way.
It's very troubling.
So how do you feel about that?
I know, one of the things is many of those establishments have had their own kind of style or code, but they haven't been published on the front door. And I think that was just a sort of an aggressive, and I haven't really talked to all the owners. I think they're rethinking that. I know that folks are trying to make sure that they have an environment that's safe and happy and all that stuff. But honestly, I think that many people have rethought why they went down that road, whether it was mandated by, you know, maybe they thought they had a nuisance points and had to get in front of it, or maybe they, but to actually have language and signage, it's certainly not something the city is involved with. I'm not involved with it. It's a council member.
Is there
it's
a private role property. For council?
I think that there's a role for a couple people have asked me for advice and what I would say and what I would do. And, of course, they know how I spend my days and the kind of young people I spend my time with. And I talk about justice a lot and what it feels like to be welcoming. And you know, I was on the radio, actually TV twice last night and this morning because Raise the Age started. And there's still people, as you know, who are against Raise the Age because they feel that somebody is going to get a free pass. And we make judgments about people. We talked about shaming before. For how do we claim who we are and what we are without making other people feel less than. That's become a really difficult thing to do. We had conversations, you and I, last week about Raise the Age, about Justice Kavanaugh. I just saw a clip by the women who came forward who said, this is why your daughters don't tell you, dads. There was a story that she came out, Dr. Ford, that said, you know, this is why young women don't tell when they've been sexually assaulted or abused. So we're talking a lot about how to treat people with respect, and I think that's one of the issues that we need to face. So often I wish that somebody, and these are not bad people, I know them all, would call and ask advice.
You're talking about the club owners?
Yeah, you know, of a neighborhood service center or of Iman and the NYCLU or somebody.
Do you view these as unintended mistakes, but mistakes nonetheless?
I wish they hadn't happened, yeah. Okay. I wish that the posting in that way had not happened. I think it misrepresents what we want to have happening in our establishments.
Let me turn to Iman, who's with the New York CLU as well, and how you viewed this issue as it kind of played out over the last week or two.
Yeah, I mean, it's nothing we would participate in because they are private businesses after all. I think just thinking as, you know, just a community member and as a civilian, we already know, a lot of us who have grown up around here know of that area as being one that's only welcome to a certain part of the neighborhood. I mean, we know that that neighborhood is actually going through a major transformation with the Inner Loop construction and, you know, the North Union areas that are being built with the new housing units and whatnot. And as we're talking about what is this actually going to mean for a city, it kind of unfortunately reinforced a lot of us, why a lot of us have avoided that corner of the city. And it's because it's, you know, a wealthier part of the city. It's been representative of the majority white residents of the city. And I think a lot of people, especially people of color, have not felt welcome there. I mean, if we want to date back to like the Black Lives Matter rally that happened, I believe, 2 years ago, a lot of the dispute actually happened in the East End. And while I don't necessarily remember all the facts, I mean, again, it resonates with what that part of the neighborhood represents. And I think we need, as a city, as we're talking about diversity and inclusion, we need to truly understand what that means. We can't just say we're a diverse community and then have private businesses that come into the city who sit in the city for years. I mean, those bars have been there for forever. Those restaurants have been there for a while too. And then, you know, subtly not welcome certain people. I do believe that they had a racial tendency, you know, undertone. I do believe that it was all intentional. I do believe that. I can't, not necessarily through the NYCLU, I can't speak through them, but I speak again as a civilian as to, you know, there was, I believe, a video that went around that was viral of, I'm not sure which bar in the same end, where a young Black woman and a young white woman were dressed exactly the same.
That's right.
And the white woman was permitted and the Black woman was not. And so, you know, we have people, and I believe there were some of the owners, and I don't know them, that responded on social media about why they decided
the claim,
to do that.
The claim was, well, the white woman was wearing frayed jeans, which are allowed, and the Black woman was wearing ripped jeans. They looked exactly the same.
Yes, and I saw the image. They looked exactly the same.
It was a pretty bogus response.
But Evan, you know, going back to what you were talking about in terms of the subway and the store, Dunkin' Donuts
in Syracuse,
How do we help people then learn a lesson versus just shaming the people that did it, too? Mm-hmm. So we're in, you know, I said last week when I was on with you that we walk in grace, that we have to learn how to forgive, that we have to learn how to instruct. I know that some of those bar owners are sorry that they were perceived that way, that they want to learn and do better. We have got to be open-hearted right back. That's one of the roles of those of us who play both sides.
I can tell you a lot of them won't return calls from media.
Okay.
And have shown very little but defiance, not all.
Yeah.
And I'm with you. I always want to be constructive as a host, to have these conversations that are healing and constructive.
Yeah.
Now I think, as private business owners, it's up to them to make a values judgment.
Yeah.
And then we'll see.
And then we'll see.
So we'll close the loop on that. Yeah. We're down to our last minute or so. So Elaine Spall, it's fashionweekofrochester.org. And if you could only go to one event next week, what would it be?
Well, I would have said Saturday, but it's sold out.
Face.
So I would come Thursday night. I got to tell you, Thursday night show, Chris is going to be there. Panache is going to be there.
Next Thursday night.
Next Thursday night. I would get online before you even turn the radio off, or maybe they're going to keep it on for the second hour. I hope they will. And go to Eventbrite on fashionweekofrochester.org and get your tickets. You know, there's tickets at $35. That's the other thing. We are never going to be that fashion show that makes it impossible for people to come at all ages and stages. Of course, the Wednesday show is free for kids, so there's that. But we are always going to be that show where somebody can afford to come for $35.
Okay, so next Thursday night, that's the one. All right, Joan, what's it going to be?
Well, we're on, our runway show is Thursday night and Saturday night, and I love being every day present for Fashion Week. There's just a buzz, and you know,
Senator,
the kid,
you didn't answer the question.
The kids are our future. The kids are our future, so why not go every single
there you go. Well, which,
night? But,
so Thursday night, what are you going to show on Thursday night? What do you guys?
Well, Thursday night we have traditionally done an Ebony Fashion Fair revival show.
There you go.
So we have these outrageous vintage outfits. Going back to when there was an Ebony Fashion Fair fashion show annually that was sold out. So we bring that to the runway. And
all right, well, have fun. It's off 590 near Midtown.
Right there. You can't
Midtown
miss it.
Right there. You'll
Club.
See it when you're driving.
Island, right.
And fashionweekofrochester.org for everything. Joan Lincoln, Elaine Spall, who helped originate Fashion Week. Great having you guys back. Thank you very much. Iman Abid, who is a board member for the Center for Youth, among other things. Nice seeing you, Iman.
You too.
And
I
guess we'll see Iman and Christopher on the runway and your stuff next Thursday. Wonderful meeting you. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
All right, more connections coming up.